The Jewish Game of Conquest, Part 3. Today, we're going to be speaking about the city of Dan. The city of Dan, you might not be so familiar with it, it's not so famous, but here, I have a map for you if you want. You want to get up. The city of Dan is in North Eretz Yisrael, in the northeast corner of Eretz Yisrael, and as its name suggests, Dan is named after the tribe of Dan, you know, like the son of Yaakov, you know, Dan. Or I guess in English they would say Dan. Like, I don't know, Dan Rather or something, but you'd rather not go there. So the name of the city is Dan, and it also, as we'll see, it had a bunch of other names as well throughout history. One of the names the Gemara says is that Dan, that's mentioned in Tanakh, is also known as the city of Pamias in Roman times. That's the name of the city, Pamias. And the truth is that in Roman, the name of the city was Panias, P-A-N-E-A-S, P-A-N-E-A-S, Panias, and it was actually named after the Greek god Pan, who was like a Greek idol that was the god of nature, and he was usually depicted with a over-accentuated male organ. It's an interesting factoid. In Roman, he was known as Faunus, because the P and the F are really interchangeable, like a pay and a fe, it's sort of interchangeable. So P and F is interchangeable. The Greek god Pan in Greek is known in Roman and in Latin as Faunus. Like the word fauna is like means like animals. In English, it's probably derived from that word. So it's really called Panias, and the Radal, Rav David Luria, writes that the reason why the Gemara calls it Pamias instead of an N, it has an M, is because we don't want to use the name of the Avodah Zarah to give the name of the city, so we sort of slightly alter the name and play around with it so that we're not using the exact name of the name of the Avodah Zarah, the idolatrous god that the city, that the Greek city was, or the Roman city was named after. So we call it Pamias, which the Radal says is sort of a portmanteau of the words pi maus, my mouth is disgusting. So it's like alluding to the fact that Avodah Zarah is disgusting, that when we call it Pamias. It's an interesting thing, as we're going to see in the next few moments, we're going to see that the city of Dan was actually associated with idolatry in a lot of different ways. We'll get to it and we'll see different manifestations of how that played out. Nowadays, the place is called Banias. Right over here, if you look at the map, it's sort of in the Golan Heights area, all the way up northeast of Eretz Yisrael, and it's called the mountain range where this place used to be is called the Banias. We call it nowadays the Banias, and that's what Rav Sadia Gaon says, that when the Gemara talks about Dan or Pamias or whatever, it's what they call in Arabic Banias. And I think the reason for that is also pretty simple, because if you take the word Pamias, which is, let's say, or Panias, which is the Greek or Roman word for it, the Greek word, or what the Chazal called it, Pamias, or what the Greeks call it, Panias, if you take the word Panias and you want to say it, if you're an Arab, so Arabs can't pronounce the P sound. They pronounce all P sounds as a B. Like, the Arabs over here, they call themselves the Palestinians. They can't even pronounce the P of Palestine. Like they can't even pronounce their own name that they made up, that they're called Palestinians, but they can't even say the word Palestine. They say Palestine. So Panias in Arabic turns into Banias, and that's why the place nowadays is known as Banias, because it got the name from Arabic. But we're getting a little bit off topic. Okay, so we'll start with the history of the city of Dan. And also, an interesting thing that the Gemara says, that you know, if you look at the map again, so the Jordan River actually starts all the way up here, and so the Gemara says that Yarden, Jordan, is two words put together, Yarad Dan. It goes down from Dan, because that's where the Jordan River starts from. There's the mountain range over here where there's a lot of snow, and then when the snow melts, that causes the water to go down the mountains, and that causes that's the source of this river, and then the river just goes all the way down. That's an interesting point. So we're going to talk about the history of the city of Dun today. I missed another interesting point. That there's an expression that we say. There's an expression. It's found in Tanakh. It's also found in the Gemara. Midon va'ad Be'er Sheva. From Dun all the way to Be'er Sheva. So what that expression means is that it means the entirety of the Jewish settlement. From Dun all the way up in the north to Be'er Sheva down in the south, it's an expression that means, you know, from east to west, from LA to New York. It means from one side to the other side. What's that? What? New York to LA?
East to west, New York to LA.
Okay, fine, you win. Fine, from LA to New York. From west to east. Same idea. Okay, so we're going to actually go a little bit out of historical order of where it's mentioned in Tanakh, and we're going to start with something else, and then we'll go back to the first places that the city of Dun is mentioned. You'll see why in the end, why I'm doing it like this. But, okay, so it says like this, in the book of Yeshua, in chapter 19, I mean, throughout the book of Yeshua, really, but especially like in these later chapters over here, in like 18, 19, it talks about it describes what were the territories of the different tribes of the Jewish people, of the 12 tribes. Right? So they have this really neat map over here in the back of the Art Scroll Tanakh, which I didn't make a copy of, but I'll just quickly show you. And this map, you know, shows you the tribal territories of the different tribes. Right? Here's the map. Now, Dan is over here, right? Over here on the east coast, west coast, west side, right? West side, on the west side, on the west coast, along the Mediterranean. Actually, nowadays, this is called, in contemporary times, it's called Gush Dan, the Dan block. This is where Tel Aviv, Bnei Brak, Yafo, all these cities are along this part of the coast over here in Dun. Right? Now, the city of Dun that we're describing is like up here somewhere. Right? So what happened? Dun's territory is over here. And then the city that we call Dun is up here. Right? This is the Jordan up here. So Dun is like somewhere here. So what happened over here? So, in Sefer Yeshua, it says like this. It says, it talks about the original borders of Dun. It talks about, you know, around the city of Yafo. Yafo is where modern-day Tel Aviv is. Originally, Yafo is an ancient city. All the way from the time of Tanakh, continued to exist from then. And they built, and I believe in the 1920s, they founded this new city called Tel Aviv, which wasn't so far away from Yafo. And Tel Aviv grew and grew and grew until it touched Yafo, and then eventually the Israeli government decided to merge Tel Aviv and Yafo into one municipality. So that's why it's called Tel Aviv Yafo, because it's two cities that because Tel Aviv grew so much, they just like merged it together with this ancient city of Yafo. So Yafo is an old city, Tel Aviv is a new city. So it says, Vayetzig in Perek Yutes, Pasuk Mem Zayin, Vayetzig Vul Bnei Don Mehem. The border of the sons of Dun came out from where it was originally confined to. Vayalu bnei Dun, and bnei Dun went up. Vayilachamu im Leshem, and they fought Leshem. Vayilkedu Yisrael, and they captured it. Vayaku Yisrael lefichorev, and they destroyed it according to the sword. Vayirushu Yisrael, and they took possession of it. Vayeshvu ba, and they dwelled there. Vayikru leleshem Dun, and they called this city Leshem. They called it Dun, Kishem Dun Avihem, like the name of their forefather, the patriarch of the tribe of Dun. His name was Dun, so they named the city Dun. There, Dun, right? Zois nachlas mate bnei Dun l'mishreisam ha'orim ha'ela v'chatzareim. This is the heritage of the tribe of Dun, according to their families, all these cities and whatever outlying places of those cities. So that's the account in the book of Yeshua of how they got the city of Dun. It was originally called Leshem. In the book of Judges, it actually also repeats this story with a little bit more detail. We'll get to that. But over there in the book of Judges, when it talks about them capturing the city, so it doesn't say that it was originally called Leshem. In the Book of Judges, the original name of the city was Laish. So now we have like a few different names for the same city. But in the Book of Judges, it was originally called Laish, and then the people of Dun captured it, and they took it over, and they called it Dun. Like in the name of their great ancestor, Dun. Okay, so as I mentioned before, it's a little bit problematic because if we looked at the map and we saw that Dun originally their territory is on the west side of on the west coast, and then this city of Dun is all the way northeast corner of the Jewish settlement by the Holy Land in the Golan. So what happened? Dun is either in Tel Aviv or the Golan. How does that work? How do we understand these things? So there's sort of three approaches to this to explaining this. One approach is what Rashi in Sefer Yeshua says, and other places, the Rabbag seems to say like this, also Gersonides. They say that what happened was that the way the territories of the Holy Land were divided between the different tribes was through a special divine lottery, a Geirel. Geirel al-Pi Hashem Yincholu. It was a girl that they got their heritage according to a special divine lottery that decided, you know, which territory goes to which tribe. So Rashi says that somehow it came out that the lottery made it that Dun inherited two territories. One territory on the west coast and one territory in the northeast corner. That's what Rashi says. It's a little bit difficult because, you know, this is the only place where we see that someone had one, that a tribe had a territory in two different places that weren't contiguous. They're not attached to each other. So like, how did they originally divide it? And then when they made the lottery, why were these two places like sort of connected? They're not geographically related to each other at all. Now that's what Rashi says. Another approach is, this is the approach of Rashi in Parshas Vizayis Abracha and the Radak and others. They say that what happened was, it's true that Dun originally was supposed to be on the west coast, in what's contemporary called Gush Dun, in the Dun block. But what happened was that their population grew so much that whatever territory they originally were allotted wasn't enough for them. And their population was growing and they needed more land. So they went out and they found this place called Leshem or Laish, and therefore they decided to take that city and you know, expand their territory to somewhere else. So that's why they have a plot of land in the west coast and then a plot of land in the northeast of the Holy Land. So that's what the Radak and others want to say. A third approach is from one of the Taimani Rishonim. He writes that what happened was, he goes, it's similar to the first approach, that originally they were on the west coast, but not that the population outgrew their original territory, but what happened was that the tribe of Dun either had some sort of idolatrous tendencies, whether they were actually committing idolatry, Avodah Zarah, or they had some sort of proclivity towards Avodah Zarah that was not necessarily manifested in reality yet, but could be and had a potential to do Avodah Zarah, and they weren't working on getting rid of it. I'm not sure exactly how that works, but they were in some way associated with Avodah Zarah. And Hashem, when he originally gave the Holy Land to the Jewish people, he stipulated that if you're going to do Avodah Zarah, you're going to lose the land. And because of that, he says that the people of Dun were losing their original territory on the west coast, the Philistines, who also lived along the coast. Right? Like, along the coast, around over here, is usually Philistine territory, at least until the time of like David HaMelech, which is later. This is in the time of, let's say, Yeshua, in the time of the Judges. Right, then it's coming up. The Philistines were close by, so the Philistines were making incursions into Dun territory, and they were losing their territory, and they didn't have enough space. So then they had to they either moved or they made another sort of colony up here by Dun, so that people will have a place to live. It's a similar idea, but this is because of specifically they lost their territory because of their association with the Avodah Zarah. And we find in a few different places that the tribe of Dun is, in specific, is associated with the Avodah Zarah. There's a Targum that says that when Amalek came to attack the Jews after they left Egypt, so they were only able to attack the people that were expelled from within the clouds of glory, because the clouds of glory were really protecting Jewish people. And the Targum says, who were these people that were expelled from the clouds of glory? It says, this is the tribe of Dan. And similarly, also, when Bilam goes to curse the Jews, so he sees that there's a group of Jews that were expelled from the clouds of glory, and the Targum says that was the tribe of Dan, that because they were Avdei Avodah Zarah, they were idolaters, so they were kicked out of the clouds of glory. Exactly what it means that they were idolaters, I don't know if it literally means that they worshipped idolatry, or they had certain tendencies that, you know, could develop into full-fledged idolatry. So, the people of Dan went, and they captured this place called Leshem or Laish. It's a very interesting thing. The word Leshem and the word Laish are both actually very much associated with the tribe of Dan itself. The word Leshem actually means is a type of a stone. It's an amber stone. It's like some sort of. It looks like a. It's a type of precious gem that looks like a fire. It's like a yellowish, orangish, glowy type of stone, and that's actually one of the 12 stones of the breastplate that the Kohen Gadol used to wear, the Chishon HaMishpat, the 12 stones that correspond to the 12 tribes. And I made a nice chart over here of the names of the 12 stones that were on the breastplate of the Kohen Gadol. You see, on the first row is Eidem Pitata Ovarekes. The second row is Nefech Sapir Yohalom. The third row is Leshem Shavar Achlama. The fourth row is Tashish Shem V'Yashvei. So stone number 7 over here is Leshem. So Leshem, that's the amber stone that I was just talking about. So
you know all the colors?
Some of them are subject to dispute. I don't know offhand all the colors, but I do have materials, different things.
You know that Leshem was this fire.
Yes, that one is one of the ones that we know for sure. Some of them are like subject to dispute. Like I remember reading about Sapir, if it's a sapphire or it's lapis or something.
And they correspond to the 12 tribes.
Yeah, they correspond to the 12 tribes.
Leshem corresponds to...
Right. If you go through the 12 tribes, it's Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, Yisachar, Zvulun, Dan. And Naphtali, Gad, Asher, Yosef, Binyamin. So Leshem corresponds to the tribe of Dan. So they found that especially... Rashi says that in this city or in the area of that city is where you would mine these gems. And that's why they called it Leshem. So it was like especially appropriate that the tribe of Dan would come to this city, which is named Leshem, which is the name of the stone that represented them on the breastplate. Another name we said was Laish. Another name for this city is Laish. What does the word Laish mean? This is very interesting. In Biblical Hebrew, there's 6 words that are used to refer to a lion. Right? A lion, there's 6 different words that mean lion. The most popular is Aryeh. Right? Then there's Aryeh, Gur, Kfir, Lavi, Shachal, and Laish. These are 6 words that mean lion. They're not necessarily synonymous. One's a male lion, a female lion. One's talking about a baby lion. One's talking about an older lion. One's talking about the head of the pride. They have different roles. Each word has a slightly nuanced meaning. But they're all different words that mean lion. Yeah? So Laish is a lion. Yeah? Now, which tribe is associated with lions? So it's true that... In the Parshas Vayechi, the tribe of Yehuda is associated with lions. But in Parshas V'zayis HaBracha, which we read last week, when Moshe Rabbeinu was giving blessings to the different tribes, so he says, Don Gur Aryeh Yizonek Min Abashan. Don is a Gur Aryeh, is a lion cub. Yizonek Min Abashan, he flows from the Bashan. Which we Mefarshim say is referring to the Jordan River, which we mentioned before, flows down from the Bashan, from that area where the city of Dan was. Flows down from there. And so Dan Gur area, Yizanik Min Bashan. And so the word Laish is the name Laish is also appropriate for the tribe of Dan, because Laish means lion, and the tribe of Dan are compared to lions. Okay, so they captured this city of. We have like 6 names for the city, right? Laish, Leshem, Dan, and then we had Pamyas, Banyas, and Panyas. So that's 6 names for the city so far. When did this happen? When did this story happen that the tribe of Dan went and they captured another territory besides their west coast territory? They got this northeast territory. So the Rashi and other Mefarshim say that this happened, even though the story is brought in the book of Yeshua and it's also brought in the book of Judges, the story actually happened after Yeshua's lifetime. It didn't happen in Yeshua's lifetime, it happened after Yeshua died. In the beginning of the time of the judges, Rashi says, specifically in the time of the first judge, whose name was Asniel ben Knaz. Okay. Now, I'll give you a few more details, and then we'll continue further on. But when in the book of Judges, when it has the account of this story, it's in chapter 18, in the book of Judges. So it's in a context of a bigger story that I'll explain what the context is in a moment. But the way it says it over there is that the people of Dan sent a squad of 5 men to go searching for a place for them to live, and they found that there is this city Laish, right? In Judges, it's called Laish. They found this city called Laish, which was particularly vulnerable. It was a Canaanite city that was sort of cut off and isolated from any Canaanite allies. So that's why they decided to specifically go there. And it says that the city was sitting in tranquility and in peace. So because of that, the people of the city weren't ready. They weren't trained to be able to fight. They weren't used to defending their city. They didn't even have any weapons. According to the Ralbag, they didn't even close the gate to the city. So it was a very especially vulnerable city, and that's why they specifically went and chose that as their target to conquer and sort of begin their northeast colony of the tribe of Dan. And then it says that after they conquered the city, so it says that they burnt the city. Question is like, why did they burn the city? What was the reason that they burnt the city? There's only one city that they completely burnt after they conquered it. That's the city of Chatzor in Sefer Yeshua. It's like, why over here did they decide to burn the city? So the Mefarshim talk about maybe they wanted to scare the inhabitants, maybe they wanted to set an example for other neighbors. But the Radak says that the reason why the people of Dan burnt the city when they conquered it is because they wanted to destroy all the Avodah Zarah that was in the city. So it seems that apparently this city was previously associated with Avodah Zarah, and now they're trying to go and destroy all the Avodah Zarah that was in the city. But as the Radak points out, it's somewhat ironic given the greater picture of the story. And now I'll tell you what was the greater picture of the story. In the book of Judges, this story actually starts in chapter 17 in Judges. There was a man named Micha or Miyahu who basically made for himself this molten image that was supposed to represent Hashem, which is of course forbidden because we don't make images that represent Hashem. It's more or less tantamount to idolatry. And from a halachic perspective, it's more or less the same thing as Avodah Zarah. In a sort of conceptual way, you could say that it's not as bad as Avodah Zarah, which is like the worship of a completely different god, because here you're worshiping Hashem, you're just doing it in this like illegal and deviant way of worshiping Hashem. Right? But that's what they did. This guy Micha, he created this molten image, and then people used to come to him, and they would use this image as an oracle. An oracle is something that like has some sort of like magical significance, where you would go and you would ask it a question, and it'll give you an answer. So the way the story goes is that when these 5 people from the tribe of Dan came to look for a place to capture, on the way they stopped off at Micha's house. Micha had this hotel where people would come by. They stopped off at his house and they found out about this oracle, and they actually consulted with the oracle of Micha's idol, and they asked, are we going to be successful in our campaign? And the oracle says, yes, go and you'll be successful. And that's actually what happened. As we said, they went and they conquered the city of Laish, whatever. But on the way, When the full army of the tribe of Dan came to go conquer the city of Laish, they stopped off again at Micha's house, and they forcibly took this idol away from Micha, and they brought it with them to the city of Dan. And as the Navi tells us in Sefer Shoftim, it says that the idol stood in the city of Dan, all the way for a very long time, all the way until the house of Hashem in Shiloh was destroyed. This is, we were talking about at the time in the Judges, was before the Beit HaMikdash was built in Yerushalayim. There's no Beit HaMikdash yet in Yerushalayim. The Eichon, which is like a temporary Beit HaMikdash, they call it the Tabernacle in English, which means the same thing as a Sukkah for some reason, but that's just the way they translate it. And at that point, the Tabernacle stood at a place called Shiloh. And so, as long as the Tabernacle stood at Shiloh, the Navi says, this idol stood in the city of Dun. So there was this idol of Pesel Micha in the city of Dun, and people would go and they would idol would worship it, or they would consult it in some illicit ways and do all kinds of, you know, treat it as an oracle, etc. So again, we see that the city of Dun is associated with idolatry. But the Radak points out the irony that when they captured Laish / Leshem, right, when they captured the city of Dun, they burnt everything because they wanted to get rid of all the Avodah Zarah that was there. But the Radak said, but they themselves, they stumbled in the sin of idolatry themselves, because they got rid of, they built a city and they put an Avodah Zarah right there in the city that lasted for generations. So he says, like, it's somewhat ironic, but the Radak points out that these people that were worshipping the idol of Micha, they weren't worshipping a foreign god, they were worshipping Hashem. So, like, they didn't, you know, they were iconoclastic in that they were getting rid of idols of other gods, but this idol, which was supposed to represent Hashem, which doesn't make any sense, but that's what they were thinking, so that they felt they could keep. Okay, so that's the story of the founding of the city of Dun, and the story of, which is commensurate with the story of Pesel Micha, of Micha's idol. Now there's another unfortunate story that happens that has to do with the city of Dun, and that is the story of Yeravam ben Nevat. Right? This is after the period of Judges, so then, you know, there's the last judge was maybe Eli HaKoyen, and then after him was the prophet Samuel, who was the leader for like 11 years. After the prophet Samuel anointed the first king, King Shaul HaMelech, King Saul, he was king for 2 years. Then came David HaMelech, king for 40 years. Shlomo HaMelech, king for another 40 years. And after Shlomo HaMelech died, so the kingdom of the Jewish people sort of fractured into two rival kingdoms. There was the descendants of David and Shlomo that were the kings in the south, in what's called the kingdom of Yehuda, the kingdom of Judah. And there was a separate kingdom, a kingdom in the north, a breakaway kingdom, that is known as Malchus Yisrael, the kingdom of Israel, which was led by other kings, not from the Davidic dynasty. They had their own dynasties and some single kings that were there. That's the 10 tribes, right? And the 10 tribes were originally led by a king named Yeravam ben Nevat, or in English, Jeroboam, the son of Bat. He was the first king of the kingdom of the 10 tribes. And one of the first acts that he did after he became king was that he wanted to eliminate his competition. How he eliminated his competition? He saw that if he would allow the Jews of his kingdom to go to Yerushalayim, to the Holy Temple, right, then what would happen is that they would see the great honor that's afforded to the king of Yehuda. Right? There's a special halacha that only a descendant of David HaMelech, a king who's a descendant of David HaMelech, is allowed to sit in the Beis HaMikdash, in the Zara, in the courtyard of the Beis HaMikdash. Any other person, any other king is not allowed to sit. So they would go to the Beis HaMikdash, they'll see this king sitting, and nobody else sitting, and they would see the great honor afforded to him, and then they'll want to follow him instead of following Yeravam. So Yeravam decided he has to make sure that people do not go to the Holy Temple in Yerushalayim. So instead, he decides he's going to set up two places of worship that the people of his kingdom could go worship there instead of worshiping in the Beis HaMikdash in Yerushalayim. And so he sets up these two golden calves. One in the city of Beth El, which is in the southern part of the northern kingdom. It's actually, technically, it's not so far away from Yerushalayim, really. But that's the southern part of his kingdom. And then he sets up another golden calf all the way up in the northeastern corner of his kingdom in the city of Dun. So that's another association of idolatry with the city of Dun. Yeravam ben Nevat as well, he wasn't worshipping a separate god, he wasn't worshipping a separate deity, but he was using this golden calf as a way of appealing to Hashem, either as a representation or an icon of Hashem or an intermediary to get to Hashem, which of course is also, it's forbidden, it's considered idol worship, it's idolatry, it's avodah zarah, but it's not worshiping a completely different god. But that's what Yoavam ben Nevat did in the city of Dan. So we have sort of these two idols in the city of Dan through history. We have Micha's idol in the city of Dan, and we have Yoavam ben Nevat's idol in the city of Dan. Eventually what happened was that because the northern kingdom, the kingdom of that was started by Yoavam ben Nevat, the kingdom of Israel, the 10 tribes, because they became so, from the beginning, they became involved in idolatry, and it just went downhill from there. It became even worse and worse and worse. In the time of Ahav, who was a few kings later, he introduced the worship of foreign deities, the Baal, Asherah. It just kept going down and down and down. Eventually, the kingdom of Israel was decimated by the Assyrians, and the Assyrians took the 10 tribes, brought them eastwards, and that's why we have like the 10 lost tribes, we don't know where they are. They were exiled originally by the Assyrians, and that's when it was destroyed.
Are they
going to
return?
It could be they did return. It could be they partially. There's a Gemara that says that Yirmiyahu Hanavi brought back the 10 tribes in the time of Yoshiyahu. There's other places that seem to suggest that they're across the Sambatian River. There's other places that seem to suggest that they became completely like Goyim. There's different sources that talk about what?
That's what Rashi says, right?
What?
That they're not coming back. They assimilated.
There's a Gemara in Yevamos which seems to say something like that. There's different sources. The way some people want to say it is like maybe a portion of the 10 tribes became like this, a portion became like this. It's different. It's a whole topic. And so that's the story with the 10 tribes and how it ended. Now, the golden calf and that whole altar and whatever temple that Yeravam built at Bethel, at Bethel, was destroyed 300 years later by the king of Yehuda, whose name was Yoshiyahu HaMelech. That's explicit in the Bible, in the book of Kings. Maybe I don't know if it's in Kings or in Chronicles, but it's explicit in the Bible. What happened to the idolatrous site of Dan? So that, we don't know what happened to it. The Bible doesn't explicitly say anything about what happened to it, but the assumption is that it was destroyed, you know, by the time that the Assyrians came to devastate the kingdom, the northern kingdom, that this site was destroyed probably by the Assyrians at that point. That's probably what happened. I happen to have been reading this morning an essay written by this person named Emmanuel Vilikovsky, who is somewhat of a conspiracy theorist, a very important philologist late 1800s, 1900s. And he has this whole essay that he wrote called The Secret of Baalbek, where he has this theory that the idolatrous practices that were in the city of Dan continued even after it was no longer occupied by the kingdom of Israel, and it came all the way down to Greek and Roman times. And that was the city of Baalbek, which is in modern-day Syria. Okay, is he right? Is he not right? I don't know. I can't judge his theory based on its merits. I don't know enough on the topic. I just happened to have been reading that this morning, and that's what I came across. Fine. So now we've basically talked about the later history of the city of Dan and its destruction. As I mentioned in the beginning of this year, I'm going out of order in the history. I skipped the first places that the city of Dan is mentioned in Tanakh. Now we're going to go back to those places where Dan comes up in Tanakh and try to understand a little bit better what's going on over there. And now you can appreciate why I did this sort of like non-intuitive way. Okay. Basically, in the book of Judges, in chapter 14, we mentioned this yesterday, and here we'll see a little bit more about it. We spoke about Avram Avinu. And Avram Avinu had this war. He was involved in a war, 4 kings and 5 kings. Or you weren't here yesterday, right?
No.
So, okay, so we'll give you a quick recap. There were 5 kings in the land of Canaan, in the Jordan River Valley area. There were the kings of Stom, Amora, Admah, Tzvoim, and Soyar. These were five kings in the line of Canaan. And they were subjugated by four Mesopotamian kings. It was the king of Shinar, which is Babylon, the kingdom of Elasar, the king of Elam, the king of Goyim. Those are four Mesopotamian kings who were very powerful. We said yesterday they were cosmocrats. The Medrash calls them cosmocrats, which means they were world superpowers. And they, their sphere of influence reached the Holy Land, reached the land of Canaan. And so they subjugated these five kings. And then the five kings rebelled, and then the four kings came to go destroy these five kings that rebelled against them. And what happened was they took, these four kings took Lot as a captive. They took Lot POW, right, prisoner of war. They took Lot, and because of that, Avraham Avinu was forced to get involved in this fight because he went to go save his nephew Lot. So Avraham Avinu intervened on behalf of these five kings to go fight these four super kings, right? And it says about Avraham Avinu, Vayishma Avram heard about this, Kinishba Achiv, that his nephew was kidnapped, Vayarek es Chanichov Yilidei Vesai, and he armed his disciples who were born in his house, Shwein Asar Shleish Me'ais, 318 people, which some people say was really only his servant Eliezer, Vayirdeif Adon, and he chased the four kings all the way to the city of Don. Vayech Alik Alim Alayla, Hu Vavadav Hayakem, and the night passed, and he continued to pursue them, and he smote them, and he chased them all the way to Chayva, Hashem Yismol Damasek, which is left of Damascus, right? You know, Damascus made it to our map over here, the capital of Syria, or whatever is left of Syria nowadays. And so Don is left of Damascus, right? Don is left of Damascus. And so Avraham Avinu chased them to Don, and it says that, let's read it carefully. Vayirdeif Adon, he chased them to Don. And then Vayecholek Aleim Laila, the night passed over them. Right? Vayak Hu Vavadov, he and his servants, Vayakim, and he smote them. Vayirdeifem Ad Choyva, he chased them to Choyva, Asher Mismol Adamasek, which is left of Damascus. So there's sort of two stages in this war over here. Avraham Avinu chased the army of the four kings to Don, Vayirdeifem Ad Don, he chased them to Don. And then it says that the night passed, whatever, and then he chased them to Chayva, to a place called Chayva, which is left of Damascus. So why do we say it in two stages? Avraham Avinu chased them to Don, and then it says, and then it was a night, and then he chased them to Chayva. Just say, the bottom line is, he chased them all the way to this place called Chayva. Why does it say he chased them to Don, and then he chased them to Chayva? Right? That's one question. We'll get back to this question in a moment. Well, I'm just going to sidetrack, because the guy who was sitting here yesterday, he would probably ask what I'm about to ask you right now. Let's look at things, let's think about it from a chronological perspective. The city of Don was founded in which time period? The period of Judges, right? Period of Judges. That's when it was founded. It got the name Don, period of Judges. So how could it be that Avraham Avinu chased these four kings to the city of Don? The city was not called Don in the time of Avraham Avinu. At best, it was called Shem Laish, the original names, the Canaanite names, right? Why does it say that he chased them to Don? Who's talking over here? Don didn't, it wasn't called Don yet. Right? By the time of, when Moshe Rabbeinu wrote the Torah, when Moshe Rabbeinu, right, the Rambam in his 13 principles of faith, in the Yud Gimel Ikrim, the Rambam says that we believe that the Torah, the five books of Moses, as we have it, were all given to Moshe Rabbeinu. Right? He wrote everything, every word of it. Right? So Moshe Rabbeinu wrote every word of it. But in the time of Moshe Rabbeinu, the city was not called Don yet. It was called Leshem, or Laish. So why does it say Avraham Avinu chased him to Don? How can Moshe Rabbeinu tell us Avraham Avinu chased him to Don? There was no city called Don in the time of Moshe Rabbeinu. Yeah? You hear the question? So some people want to say that this is a different place that was called, that happened to have also been called Don. Reuven Margolis says it's really Didon, which was a Midianite tribe, the Ksava Kabbalah, the Das Mikra, they say that it's a different city that was also called Don. But Chazal seemed to understand, no, it was really Don, the same Don that we've been talking about this whole time. It's the same city Don. So how could the Torah say that it was he chased him to Don, didn't have the name Don yet in the time of Moshe Rabbeinu? So Ibn Ezra says that Moshe Rabbeinu called it done prophetically. He right now, at the time Moshe was writing the Sefer Torah, this city was really called Leshem or Laish. But when Moshe Rabbeinu was writing it down, Hashem gave him a nevuah that this city is later going to be called Dan, and that Moshe Rabbeinu wrote it down in the Sefer Torah, Vayirdoif Ad-Dan. He changed him to Dan because that was the name that the city is going to be called later on. Okay, that's just a side point for this guy. You understand why I'm talking about this guy? Because he asked a similar question yesterday when we were talking about the city of Hebron. Right, we said, why is it called Kiryas Arba? Because there were four people buried there. But there weren't four people buried there when we called it Kiryas Arba. We called it Kiryas Arba when Sarah was buried there, which was the first person to be buried there. Okay, whatever. Okay, so back to what I was asking, right? It says that Avraham Avinu chased them to Dan, and then it says he chased them to Chayva. Why does it say it in two stages? So the Medrash tells us like this. Pirkei Derabbi Eliezer, the name of the Medrash. It says that what happened was when Avraham Avinu, with his army, reached the city of the place, the site where the city of Dan is going to be. I don't know if there was a city there yet or not, but when Avraham Avinu reached that place, he had a special prophecy from Hashem, or a special Ruach HaKodesh, a special divine inspiration, that he saw that in the future, in this place, there's going to be an Avodah Zarah. And because Avraham Avinu saw that in this place there's going to be an Avodah Zarah, he was pained by it. And it caused him a lot of suffering, personal anguish over it. And that caused him to sort of delay. And he was delayed over there at that city. And then he sort of stopped. I don't know exactly what he did. Maybe he cried, he contemplated, he davened, he prayed. I don't know what he did exactly. And then he continued. So it was two stages. It was, he chased them to Dan. And then there was the night. And then he continued and he chased them Ar Chayva. Right? Now, there was an interesting idea from a sefer I saw called Nefloyis Mitaras Hashem Yisbarach, which the name of the book literally means wonders from the Torah of Hashem, may he be blessed. He brings a lot of very wondrous ideas that he takes different pieces of the Bible and he like puts them together and shows how this is aware of this. It's a very interesting book. He wants to say that, and there's other sources that support this, that Dan and Chayva are really the same. It's really the same place. Asher mismol at Damascus, right? Dan is to the left of Damascus, right? Dan is to the left of Damascus. We said Chayva, which is left of Damascus. Dan is also left of Damascus. So he says that Dan and Chayva are really the same place, and he says that it alludes to two different aspects of Dan. One is what we said earlier, that Yeravam ben Nevat established an Avodah Zarah in Dan. So that's when Avraham Avinu chased him to Dan, he saw prophetically that there's going to be an Avodah Zarah in Dan, the Avodah Zarah of Yeravam ben Nevat, the golden calf. And then also Chayva. Chayva means, literally means guilt, a place of guilt. Why is it called the place of guilt? Because there was also another Avodah Zarah in this city of Dan, and that's the Avodah Zarah of the idol of Micha. So that's one place where the tribe of Dan is mentioned. Where the city of Dan is mentioned. Right? Okay, whatever. I meant to say this before, but when we talked about Moshe Rabbeinu writing in the Sefer Torah, Dan, so it also comes up another place in the Chumash. In Parshas Vizayis Bracha, when Hashem tells Moshe Rabbeinu, you could see the land of Israel, but you can't go there, you're going to have to die before you go there. So it says that Hashem showed him the whole land of Israel. It says over there, that he showed Vayareo Hashem es kol ha'aretz es ha'gilad ad-don. Hashem showed him the whole land, es ha'gilad, which is in the Transjordan area, ad-don, to the city of Don that we're talking about now. Ve'es kol Naphtali, ve'es Ephraim of Manasseh, all the lands of the future tribes. So again, it says ad-don, even though Don didn't exist in the time of Moshe Rabbeinu. Okay, fine. But that's also true of all the other territories that were mentioned over there. One last point, we're gonna finish with this, and this is on Yaakov Avinu's deathbed, when Yaakov Avinu gives blessings to all the different tribes in Parshas Vayechi. So Yaakov gives a very interesting blessing to the tribe of Dan. It says, "Dan, Yodin Amoi, Dan shall avenge his people, Ka'achad Shiftei Yisrael. The tribes of Israel will be united as one. Yehi Dan Nochash Alei Derech, Dan shall be a snake on the road, shfifon ali oirach, a viper or another type of snake on the path. Haneshech ikvesus, who bites the heel of a horse, vayipal reich vayachor, and his rider falls backwards. Liyushuascha kivisi Hashem, for your salvation do I long, O Hashem. That's the blessing that Yaakov Avinu gives to Dan. He says that, Dan, you should be like a snake that's on the road. And he repeats himself. Like a snake that's on the path, who bites the heel of the horse, causes the rider to fall, and then he has like ends off with a prayer, Yishuatzcha kivisi Hashem, for your salvation I await Hashem. I wait for your salvation. So what's happening over here? What's Yaakov Avinu talking about? A snake on the road, on the path? What's a snake on the road, on the path? Why does he say road and then he says path? There's two different words for snake. Fine, I don't want to focus on that. But there's two different roads. He says words for road. Derech and Oirach. A road and a path. What's the difference between a road and a path? One question. What did Yaakov Avinu see prophetically that was such a calamity that he ended off the blessing with, Yishuascha kivisi Hashem, for your salvation I await, O Hashem. What do you need a salvation from? What's the problem? What's the issue? So this Sefer, the Flois Meteres Hashem Yisparach, says that this is alluding to the future city of Dan. And there's two elements that are associated, there's two idolatrous elements that are associated with the city of Dan. This goes back to what we were saying. We said there was the idol of Micha in the city of Dan, and then there was the golden calf of Yeravam in the city of Dan. So he says like this, both of these idols are like snakes. Snakes are poisonous. You don't want snakes, they're bad. They cause a lot of trouble. I actually had a snake in my sukkah last year. Not fun. And based on the markings on the snake's body, the professional snake catcher that we called up told us, this is a very poisonous snake. Luckily, we only saw it once. But he says that he really scared us. He said they're territorial, you know, it's going to come back. But Baruch Hashem, it didn't come back. Anyways, so snakes, you don't want snakes. Snakes are evil. The snake is the yetar, right? Snakes are evil. Snakes are bad. A snake on the road, there's a snake on the path. What's the difference between a road and a path? A road is a wide road. I can go this way, I can go that way. There's a lot of room. There's a lot of leeway. A path is more narrow. The word ayrach is a path. It's narrower. There's only like one way you can go, right? So he says it's narrower. When we talk about the snake on the road, he says that's talking about the snake on the road is referring to the idol of Micha, the first one that we saw that in the time of the judges that they established in the city of Dan. That's the idol. That's the snake on the road, because in the time of the Pesel Micha, if people wanted to, they could go to the legitimate places of worship. They could go to the Mishkan in Shiloh, the Tabernacle in Shiloh, or where, you know, to go legitimately worship Hashem. There was nothing stopping them. But if they wanted to, they could also go to, you know, Pesel Micha, to Micha's idol in Dan. So that's the snake on the road. And then there's the snake on the path. That's a reference to the golden calf that Yeravam ben Nevat erected. Because Yeravam ben Nevat, one of the policies that he had in his kingdom was, you're not allowed to go to the base of Mikdash in Yerushalayim. He blocked the roads that go to the base of Mikdash. He posted sentries or guards to make sure that people wouldn't go there for Yom Tov, for the Shalosh Regalim, the thrice yearly pilgrimage, a Pesach Shavuot Sukkot, supposed to go to the base of Mikdash. He made sure that the people in his kingdom did not go. So his road was, in a sort of a metaphoric way, it was a narrower road. There's only one way. You can only do this deviant way of worshiping Hashem. There's no legitimate way of worshiping Hashem. So that's the snake that's on the path. It's a snake on the path. It's narrower. You can only go to his path. There's no leeway. There's no two lanes, right? There's only his path. That's the snake on the path. This snake on the path, this Yeravam ben Nevat's idol, that the golden calf that he made in Dan, as well as the other golden calf, that's what caused the eventual downfall of the kingdom of Israel. Right? When a snake bites the heel of the horse, right? So imagine a soldier, cavalry, right? He's riding a horse, big guy in armor, right? With all his paraphernalia, riding on a big horse, right? When a little snake comes in the corner, and bites the heel of the horse. Yeah, would you imagine that that little action that happened over there in the little corner could take down the entire man riding this horse? You wouldn't imagine that, but that's the way it works, right? So would you imagine that this little town, this city in the northeastern corner, the northeastern extremity of the land, right, of the kingdom of Israel, there's something wrong happening over there that's eventually going to cause the downfall of the whole kingdom? No, you wouldn't. It's conceptually the same thing as the horse. The venom spreads, causes the horse to fall down, causes the rider to fall down. Right? It's a little extremity. You bit him right on his heel. Just like the northeastern corner, you bite him all the way in the corner of the heel. It spreads, causes the horse to fall, causes the rider to fall. Same thing over here. One little iota of Avodah Zarah in the corner of the kingdom of Israel caused the entire kingdom to fall. And when Yaakov Avinu saw that, he prayed to Hashem, you know, that this shouldn't be the utter downfall of the entire Jewish people. L'yishuascha kivisi Hashem. To your salvation we await, O Hashem. Thank you very much. Sure.